It does fit our lesson well tonight. And I appreciate the efforts in finding the song to do that. And definitely, I've enjoyed our time together. I've enjoyed bringing you messages from God's Word. My family and I definitely appreciate all that you've done for us. You have treated us greatly, and we are so welcome and so thankful for the way you've welcomed us in and accepted us. And I hope you truly have gained from the messages that I've had to bring. It's always a sad thing to come to the close, but this is the last lesson. But, you know, me and Philip was talking, you know, good lessons and different things, you got to have a good start and you got to have a good finish. So hopefully we can finish out strong and everything will be great. Hopefully, like I said, you'll gain much from it. We're continuing, and like I said, finishing with this whole idea of our view of the church, our mindset toward the church, what the church should be. You know, and I made the point that, you know, the church is each and every one of us individually. And what the church will be in the next few years coming up is really dependent upon our young people. It really is. And we also need to understand that our young people are dependent upon us. And we really have to give them the instruction that they need, the support that they need, the guidance that they need. And that can be done in so many different ways. And one is sometimes to just put it right in front and say, this is what you've got to be. And you cannot be this. And that's sort of one of these lessons where we're going to take, and just like we did this morning with our two lessons, we're going to look at bad examples and good examples of what you should be as a young person. And that can definitely be a young child of God. I know a lot of young people that have obeyed the gospel at a very young age that have great potential, great things that they're doing now, and I hope they'll continue to do those things. I hope they continue to work hard at those things. So tonight, like I said, we're going to take and look at young people that are not needed in the church, and then we're going to finish up hopefully on that good note again about young people that are truly needed in the church, in the body of the church. So the first one I want to start with, because, you know, I've got quite a few points here, so I'll just jump right in on this. Some young people that are not needed in the church would be children that mock the messenger of God. You know, those that they do not see the importance in those that would teach the gospel. Those that do not take and see the necessity of the gospel in preaching. And I know some of you are thinking, you know, you're talking about young people and you're talking even about children. And you're thinking, you know, they don't know that, but they can. They should. You know how they do that? They do it by example. They do it by looking at you. They do it by looking at me. And they see our concern. They see our influence. They see our zeal. They see our importance that we put on these things. A point I like to make here is, you know, my boys, you know, I had a Ford one time. I don't like Ford. I'm sorry for those of you that love Fords. But I have two Fords, and they give me the awfulest trouble ever was. I really don't like a Ford. And you hear me grumble about a Ford. I'll grumble about the house. You know, I don't want a Ford, you know. And my boys, they'll look at a Ford. I go, oh, there goes a Ford. Ain't that a piece of junk? I'm like, how do you know anything about a Ford? You know why they have that opinion? Because I don't like a Ford. All right, so when it comes down to matters of the church, religious matters, and they take and they watch you, they listen to you, they pattern their stuff after you. So when we start thinking about this importance and not mocking and not taking and taking it for granted, they get that from us. They get that from us. So what we really do not need is children that take the message for granted. And they don't take and give respect to those that teach it and instruct it. Now that doesn't just have to be, say, me up here in the pulpit. That's like Bible classes. We as parents need to make sure that our children are showing our Bible class teachers great respect and then really trying their best to gain as much as they can from it. We get this ideal, and a lot of these I have, they are children. They're children that are mentioned, but I think it fits young people in general, not just when we think, because when we start thinking children, we think little tiny kids. But, you know, as parents, we understand our children are children. They're our children. They, no matter at their age, whether they're babes in our arms or, you know, mine's going to be taller than my wife pretty soon. They're getting there quick. They're still our children. You know, but the concept is young people. As they're growing up, we've got to get certain mindsets into them. 2 Kings 2, verses, and I really, I've got 20 through 24, but on the screen I've got 23 and 24. It says, then he went up from there to Bethel, and as he was going to the road, some youths, you know, it doesn't say children, some youths came out from the city and mocked him and said to him, go up, you bald head, go up, you bald head. So they're making fun of the prophet here. And so he turned around, he looked at them and pronounced a curse on them in the name of the Lord, and two female bears came out of the woods and mauled 42 youths. You know, sometimes I think people say, oh, but they're just kids. You know, they're just kids, overlook it. I'm not fully sure the Lord's going to overlook, you know, certain things like that. You know, we talk about age of accountability and stuff. Children are pretty smart. Youths are pretty smart. And as they get older, definitely up toward the teenage years, early 20s, I think the Lord's really going to hold you accountable for not taking His message serious. You know, but I think even as littler kids, you know, if you're making fun and carrying on, I think you're going to be held accountable. Parents, I think we're going to be held accountable for not holding them accountable here on this earth. Some other young people that I'm sure that are not needed in the church that are more destructive than helpful are young people who dishonor their parents. Young people that do not hold their parents at a level of reverence. That do not take and respect them, you know. Now, I'm one of those. In Kentucky, we never did any yes ma'am, no ma'am, yes sir, no sir. We didn't do that. That just wasn't what it was. Where Deanna's at in Virginia, it wasn't done. We didn't say those things. It was never there. And I come down to Florida, to Jasper there, where I went to school. And I remember one of the first days in school, I come in, they call my name and roll. You know, and in Kentucky, I said, yes or yeah. You know, because up in Kentucky, yeah was good enough for yes, yeah. You know, but to them, it's like, ooh, you a disrespectful young thing, ain't you? And so the teacher looked, she's like, yeah, what? And I'm like, so I stopped. So I was thinking, you know, the first thing in my mind, she didn't like, yeah. I said, yes. And she said, what? And somebody beside me says, yes, ma'am. And I'm like, yes, ma'am. And she went on. But I was thinking, you know, what it was. And then it dawned on me that she took that as disrespectful. And I actually went up to her afterwards and said, I'm very sorry. I said, don't take it as me being disrespectful. I said, we don't say yes, ma'am. We don't say no, ma'am. We don't say yes, sir. We don't say no. I said, my parents taught me, though, to show respect. That's why I'm up here right now. You know, I want you to know that I didn't disrespect you. And I do have you at a level of respect. I didn't do that. But my parents had taught me that. But sometimes people think that long as young people, you know, sort of use that language, that they're showing honor and respect. Most cases, it's not. You know, that's what I learned. Most of the kids in the class that said, yes, ma'am, I'm here, you know, they're snickering, they're laughing, they're making fun because this was a substitute teacher. You know, there's no respect whatsoever for her. None. You know, it didn't matter that they used certain words. There was still no respect there. You know, so we definitely do not need young people to take and dishonor their parents or dishonor anyone at a level of age at all. Leviticus 20:9, for everyone who curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. He has cursed his father or his mother, his blood shall be upon him. Under the old law, disrespectful young folk, you drug them out and you stoned them to death. Guess who had to throw the first stone? The parents. The parents was the one to throw the first stone. They were really the ones commanded to throw the first stone. You know, so if you got like a smart mouth young man, yeah, you drug him out when he mouthed off of his dad, they drug him out and they made the parents pick up the first stone and everybody that was there beat them to death with stones. That's how the Lord views young people when it comes to dishonoring their parents or not showing respect to their parents. So we definitely don't need that kind of individual. Now, you know, in the church, when we start thinking about young people within the church and we're raising these for the next generation, we've got to teach them to have honor and respect for the ages. And I'm not talking about old people. I even my age, you know, have respect for someone my age in the 30s, you know, or the 20s, you know, according to your age group. Look for those that are older than you. You know, they have got experience. They have endured things. You know, show them respect. Another group of young people not needed are young people who speak vanity and whose right hand is in falsehood. This is coming out of Psalms 144, verses 7 and 8. Send thy hand from above, rid me, deliver me out of great waters from the hand of strange children whose mouth speaketh vanity and the right hand is a right hand of falsehood. You know, I tell my young boy sometimes he needs to quit with the foolishness and you know, and I know there's a balance. You know, there is a balance as you know, young people are growing up that you got to let them be kids, you got to let them play, you got to let them do things, and they learn from things. But you know, there are certain times you got to teach them that they cannot act in the same manner they would on the playground. You know, like here in the building, this isn't the time and place to be running around up and down the pews, in and out in the back door. It's not the place. You know, and there's just certain times. You know, when you're gathered together with I tell you, a bunch of older folks, you know, it's not the place for the kids to be running all between your legs and different things and pushing older people over. And, you know, that's not their place. You know, and when we start thinking to speak in vanity, just, you know, especially being a teacher at school, there's a lot of just craziness that comes out of kids' mouth nowadays. It may have been true when I was that age too. I don't know. You know, it could have been, but I just say there's a lot of craziness. You know, there's a lot of just made up language, made up words, made up structures for things. And I don't know, you know, to me, just in my classroom, there were just times I would hear something like, whoa, what? You know, and I would just stop and I'm like, explain. Because I said, I'm not sure that means what I think it means, but that's craziness. What are you saying? You know, and I'd make them explain it. And they're like, yeah, Mr. Cox, that don't mean nothing. And I'm like, it must mean something. You said it. But I've just noticed a lot of young people, they don't take things serious. And I'm not talking about little kids. You know, little kids, they're not supposed to see the seriousness in everything. You know, it's not supposed to have that big of an impact on them. But as we start growing older, I mean, teenagers, we definitely ought to have the idea. If you're going to get behind the driver's seat, you got to have your mind focused. You can't be just going on with foolish things and carrying on and driving. You're going to kill yourself and kill somebody else. You know, so as you start thinking about young people in the church, you've got to have those individuals that are being raised and they're growing and they're maturing and they understand, you know, reverence. And I think too often today we don't put enough emphasis maybe on reverence. You know, I think that's why the Lord's name is used so much in vain, even among so-called His people. You know, they just take His name for granted. You know, they add it with things, they throw it in on things, and it's not held with true reverence. And our children, our young folk, they pick up on that, and usually the next generation is the one that makes it worse. You know, how do we exalt God? Where do we place Him in our lives, in the way we speak, the way we talk, in our lessons, in our Bible classes? Where does God sit? Do we teach them as if we're teaching them fairy tales? Or do we teach them as this is the Word of God? This is what's going to save your soul. This is what you're going to live your life for. Or do we teach it more like fairy tales? Oh, this was a great story. You know, David, and he put a rock in the sling and he threw it. And you know, we make all this up because we want to entertain them and keep them excited, but we got to make sure that level of reverence is there. The more that we're really not needed within the church is rebellious. Rebellious young people. Young people that fight what, you know, the so-called system. But this would be those that rebel. They rebel against their parents. They rebel against God. They know what's right, and they fight it. They fight it. Isaiah 31. Now, some of these that I've got apply to the children of Israel, but it's the way the Lord is looking down on His young people, His people, His group that He's got. He talks about them being His children unto Him and Him being His Father. But woe to the rebellious children, says the Lord, who take counsel, but not of Me, who devise plans, but not of My Spirit, that they may add sin to sin. We start thinking about young people and in the church and growing. Where do they get their counsel? Where do they take their counsel from? It's a shame to say that TVs have got where they do more teaching to our children than we do sometimes. And that's a shame. You know, woe to the rebellious children, those that would fight. You know, we talked liberal and conservative the other night, right? And we talked about the mindset of liberals, that progressive change. That's this ideal of rebellious. I don't like our life. I don't like having to go to service. I don't like studying the scriptures. I don't like this. I want to be free. I want to do this. I want to do that. Those are definitely not needed in the church. Because, you know, what they're doing is they're here till they can leave and be free and escape. Their mindset is not right. I know we lost some of our young folk at Lakeview some years back. As soon as they went off to college, he told his dad. The one boy just flat told his dad. He says, "I obeyed for you." He says, "I obeyed for you," and he says, "You know, I'm off at college now, and I'm going to do my thing." You know, and that's sort of where he's at. You know, we need to have young people that are well grounded in the Scriptures, and that starts young. That starts young. You know, And, you know, the parents, they talk to me about it, and I've discussed it with them. And some of the points I made to them, I said, you know, up till like 3 years ago, you thought it was fine to miss services. I said, you missed services to travel. You did it quite often. I said, I remember those days. I said, you let him miss the services to play in the band. I said, he missed some services to play football. I said, you didn't make it important to him. You made it something that should be done. He was coming of age. He knew a certain amount of scriptures and knowledge. And I think you sort of let him know that it was sort of that time of accountability. And he did it. But you didn't really give him the idea that this was his life, that he was choosing to be transformed. You know, rebellious young people. Just those that fight. I think my sister would have fell in this category when she was very young. My poor mama, when she got pregnant with my brother, you know, there's three of us, so he's the youngest. She prayed every night, she said, for twin boys and not another girl. My sister, by the time she was one, fought everything. I mean, that was just her view of life. If mama wants me to do it, then I'm definitely not going to do it. And she would be to the point that she would hold her breath until she would pass out. I mean, completely out, to the point mom would have to put her mouth on her mouth, blow air back into her lungs for consciousness. She said she had to do it almost every church service. Every church service. She said, here she'd start, you know, said, still, Andrea. And take her out. And pass out. You know, I mean, it was that way. And my mama fought that battle over and over and over. And you have to get that rebelliousness out of young people. Sometimes they don't know it's for their own good. You know, but we're the parents. We made that choice to have them. We made that choice to take and raise them unto the Lord. And sometimes we got to make those hard choices to take and say, hey, you are rebelling. Stop. Let's talk about it. Let's discuss it. And if you can't come to a good realization, we're going to take a few things until we talk about it a little more. And then sometimes, you know, there's just nothing we can do about it. I'm sorry to say, but at a certain age and, you know, certain time frames in life, they have to make those choices. They got to make their own choices. And sometimes those aren't the right choices. And sometimes we just have to continue to fight that the rest of our lives and hope that we can be an influence or others may be an influence. Some other young people not needed are young people that lie and will not hear the law of the Lord. That comes from Isaiah 30 and 9. Again, this is talking about the children of Israel as a whole, but it's this idea of, you know, children to a father, you know, as a parent looking at his children. It says that this is a rebellious people. And I know that goes real good with their last point, too. Lying children. Children who will not hear the law of the Lord. You know, we cannot have children or young people within the church that are willing to lie. You know, and I've already talked about this half-truth or not telling the full truth. You know, it doesn't just take a blatant lie. You know, I saw aliens outside. It doesn't take to that as much as just not being fully clear on something. You know, just taking and misleading to the parents or misleading to others. You know, because that'll lead right into not accepting other things, not accepting the full truth of the Scriptures, you know, just doing what they please. Children who will not hear the law of the Lord. See, that goes right into it. You know, the law of the Lord is a definite. It's an absolute. Lying is not an absolute. You know, you sort of change it, you manipulate it, you move it. But the law of the Lord is an absolute. So these young people that have this idea you can lie and tell stories about things, they'll never accept the full law of the Lord because it's an absolute. I know. I've come home and told Deanna the 2 years I was actually in a high school, at the building at a high school. I said, these kids will lie to you in a heartbeat. They will steal everything they can steal from you. And it was true. The second year that I was there, I ended up finally getting a closet in my room. I locked everything up in the closet. Everything but the school books. They wouldn't go steal a school book. They didn't want that extra learning, but they would steal everything else you had. It didn't matter. Everything. If it was there, they would steal it. And lie to you, they would lie about everything. I had a lady, she was coming to help. She was like a social worker. And she caught me in the hall, and I could tell she was troubled. I said, can I help you, ma'am? You know, being an employee. She goes, no, I know exactly where I'm at. She said, I'm just so tired of being lied to constantly. And I'm like, what do you mean? She said, these kids lie about everything. You take and start watching even like Disney shows. You see these kids, they lie constantly. Constantly lie, 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 lie. You know, that's what our kids, if we let TV and other things like that, you know, influence them, that's what they're going to think is right. It's fine to lie. It's fine not to tell the full truth about things. We cannot have that. We've got to let our young people know that there's only the truth. We spoke this morning about the seven things that are an abomination unto God. It's that lying tongue. You know, we cannot let our young people tell us falsehoods. We've got to make them set it straight. We've got to make them tell us the truth. We do not need young people that backslide. that backslide, that are willing to go back. Just like this morning we talked about the women, and you know, like Lot's wife had turned back. You know, young people within the church is willing to just continue to backslide, to go backwards, not to grow. You know, we've got to get the mindset into them that they always have to grow. They cannot backslide. They cannot just stop and quit doing. Jeremiah 3:14, again, it's talking about like children of Israel as a whole, but again, God looking at His people, return, O backsliding children, says the Lord, for I am married to you. I will take you, one from a city and two from a family, and I will bring you to Zion. But He says, return, O backsliding children. You know, and that's what they would do. You know, there would be a generation that would serve Him properly. But that generation wouldn't teach their children properly, though. You know, in a sense, for them to get the right understanding. And next thing you know, they're leaving God again. And then something terrible has to come upon them. Think about Judges. You know, and then you go into the kings. It was just this repeating pattern over and over and over. And He says, return, O backsliding children. Those that know what's right and you're sliding away, you're leaving. Come back. In the New Testament, it talks about that. Tossed to and fro by every wind of doctrine. You know, this comes up. Well, I'm just not as faithful as I could. Oh, but now I am faithful. No, now I'm weak as water. No, I'm faithful again. That's this whole idea of this backsliding. You know, you're on, you got a little bit of zeal, then you're off. It's like flipping a switch. You know, we don't need young people like that. We need people that have this zeal and not, and you know, a lot of young people will not have that zeal maybe to begin with, but it grows. It's like a fire. You stoke a fire. That's with our young folk. When we work with them, even as little children, you got to get that fire burning. Not by making, you know, good stories, but you build that fire by that understanding of who God is and exactly how you must serve Him and that reverence you have for Him. And the more they study the Scriptures, the more that fire will burn. Jeremiah talked about trying to just not teach, not instruct, and how that was a fire that was within him and he couldn't contain it and it just had to come forth. That's what we have to get young people to have, is that fire. You know, build that and keep them from going back and forth. I cannot tell you how to do that. I mean, I really can't. I can't tell you to say, yep, this is the exact pattern to do that. You know, I can't really tell you how to teach math to every child because I can't do that. You know, but that's our mindset. That's our goal, is to make sure we have young people that don't backslide, go back and forth all the time. Continue to stoke that fire. That takes a whole church. You know, some people just say, oh, that's the family. No. You know, mom and dad may be trying as hard as they can. It takes the whole church. You know, it talks about, you know, it takes the whole tribe to raise a child. You know, that same thing with within the body of Christ. You know, I may have two boys, but I know for a fact, looking at the congregation and the way they look at so many others, if things started happening, mom and dad may not be the first one that could help. Now you're thinking, really? Mom and dad ought to be the first. Yeah, but children, we all been there. We've been there. We put up a little bit of wall to our parents sometimes. You know, we block them out. But you know, maybe an 18-year-old compared to my 12-year-old could come over and say, little brother, you know, that ain't right. You know, I know your mom and daddy's taught you better now. You know, you can fix that. You can do better now. You know, we don't need backsliding children. We got to watch for that because it becomes a pattern, sort of like tennis. It becomes a pattern. If you can stop it ahead of time, you can break that pattern quick. We do not need young people who forsake God. Again, with Jeremiah, Jeremiah 5:7, how shall I pardon you for this? Your children have forsaken me and sworn by those that are not gods. When I had fed them to the full, they committed adultery and assembled themselves by troops in the harlots' houses. But he says, you know, your children have forsaken me. You know, I know you think, well, young people in the church, are they forsaking God? They're not within the church. But, you know, a whole part of this lesson is for us to teach our young folk to not want to forsake or not fall in the category of forsaken. And sometimes forsaken doesn't have to be a complete falling away either. You know, that's why it talks about, you know, don't forsake the assembling of yourselves together. A lot of people will say, oh, that's a full abandonment of assembling. No. That can just be even one time or a couple times or just getting a little pattern started. You know, I just can't get up on Sunday mornings in time to be at Bible class, or Wednesdays are just too hard to get to. You know, and they let other things influence them. Sometimes it's sports. Sometimes it's even jobs. I think a lot of young people really, really struggle with that, especially now, you know, even with like Obamacare and some things. A lot of jobs, so that they don't fall into a certain pattern, they'll only work you 20 hours. for even adults, 20 hours. So a lot of people have had to get multiple jobs, multiple part-time jobs, so they can get 20, 20, and get a full 40. The problem is because there's so many little 20s that people schedule you all over the place, and you can't get off for Wednesdays, you can't get off for Sundays. And, you know, these young people, they're really having to fight this. I mean, I didn't know how bad of a battle it was till here at Lakeview. I've got about 4 or 5 that's in that age bracket of, you know, about early 20s. You know, and they're trying to go to college, and they're trying to do this, and it's a battle. It's a battle to just have a good, solid schedule and still be off for services. It's real easy for it to become a pattern. Well, you know, I just couldn't get the job without having to forsake the, you know, Wednesday nights. Or, you know, they just want me to work ever so many Sunday mornings or Sunday nights, you know, and it's a battle. It's a battle. We need young people that's willing to say, no, I'm not forsaking my God. I'm not. He comes first and foremost. But that really is going to come down to the parents showing that that's what they're willing to do. That's what they're willing to do. Let's try to end, like I say, on a good note. Let's talk about some young people that are truly needed. And I know y'all got some good, strong young people. There's a lot of good work done this morning by young people here in this congregation. What we really need in the church is young people who put the Lord's will over their own. Again, that's part of that not willing to forsake. Judges 11:36. So she said to him, "My father, if you have given your word to the Lord, do to me according to what has gone out of your mouth, because the Lord has avenged you of your enemies, the people of Ammon." Now here in Judges, this is Jephthah's daughter. This is Jephthah's daughter. Jephthah, the judge here, he made a promise to the Lord. He says, "If you'll take and be with me, I'll give you the very first thing that comes out of my house." As he walked up to his house, here come his daughter just running out, and he just broke his heart. And he told her, he says, "You know, daughter, this is what I told the Lord. I promised him the first thing that come out my door, the first thing I've met with, that I would offer it up to him." This is her speaking. "My father, if you have given your word to the Lord, do to me according to what has gone out of your mouth." Now that is a fine young person right there now, isn't it? You know, Lord, this is the Lord's will. This is what must be done. I will make sure it happens. I'll make sure it happens. Yeah, we definitely need more young people like that. You know, it would be nice to have a building full of 16, 18, 20-year-olds that's got that mindset, wouldn't it? The Lord comes first and foremost in everything. We need young people who are good Bible students. Good Bible students. I can say growing up, I would be sort of like that tennis court. There were times that I really studied hard. Then there were times that I wouldn't pick it up all week. You know, that's how I was as a young person. And it would be great if we had people like Timothy. You know, Paul, you know, exhorts him, "Till I come, give attention to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine." We need young people that are immersing themselves in the Bible. That is what they're focused on. You know, and growing up, I loved hunting, loved fishing. You know, I loved working on my truck, and all these things really took and interfered with good, solid Bible study. I wonder still today, you know, where could I be now as a preacher? You know, how much better could I serve you this weekend if I would have put the time in I needed as a young person? As a young person. I think we've all probably been there. But just think if we had a building full of good, strong young people that just had that solid Bible knowledge, they'd probably teach us a few things, wouldn't they? What's needed in the church? Young people with genuine faith. Again, we're going to talk about Timothy, but when you talk about genuine faith, you know, faith is more than just saying, "I believe." Faith is followed with obedience. So when it talks about this genuine faith that's in Timothy, and we talked about this morning about his mother and his grandmother, 2 Timothy 1:5, "When I call to remembrance the genuine faith that is in you, which dwelt first in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and am persuaded is in you also." That's this faith that I know what God has given me to do, and I am definitely going to be obedient to it. That's genuine faith. That's not wavering faith. You know, that's not weak faith. That is that faith that says, "Yes, I am doing exactly what's being told to me to do." Again, wouldn't it be great to have a building full of young people that says, "Lord, you said it, it's done." You know, when I think about the Lord Himself, you know, Christ, there in the, you know, His prayer right before, you know, there in John 17, His prayer unto God, the true Lord's Prayer. You know, he says, you know, it's not talking about it's finished. You know, what you sent me to do, it's finished. He hadn't died yet. He hadn't went on the cross, but that's that genuine faith we're talking about there. He didn't matter what else was going to come upon him, whatever else he was going to face, which I think he knew exactly what it was. But he said, it's done. It's done. I said, nothing's going to keep me from doing your will. I am going to the cross. I'm going to die. I am going to fulfill your commands. It's finished. It's done. I know Philip the other night, his father-in-law talked about, you know, the young people here, and he said he liked being classified as a young person. You know, Philip, me and you are young to some of our older brethren. You know, wouldn't it be nice if we even have people our age, 30, 40, that had such genuine faith, let alone talking about, you know, 10, 15, 18, 20, 25. Just people with good, solid, genuine faith. That obedient faith that the Lord told me to do it, it's done. No questions, it's done. We need people, young people in the church that are good examples. And I made a point of this already in one of my lessons. I'm not sure which. They run together a little bit, you know, because they're made to work together. But young people, even children, can be such great examples to us. The Lord Himself, you know, made that point. Be ye like children. You know, children, they really don't have malice. You know, a lot of times there's not deceit within children. You know, sometimes they lie because it's funny, but they don't do it really to hurt. You know, they may do it sometimes for a little bit extra gain, but, you know, when you take and watch a lot of little kids, you know, everybody's playing to have fun, a little kid get hurt. They stop. They all rush over. They help. They nudge them back up. They encourage them. And pat them on the back. You're okay. It's good. Can we do anything to help? And then, I mean, once they're fine, they're like, they're everywhere again. But, you know, there's so much we can learn from young people. Young people. You know, in Timothy here, Paul is telling him, let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word and conduct and love and spirit and faith and in purity. You know, there are some of our young men that have obeyed the gospel even at a very young age, we look at them and some of them have such great zeal. And I know to me that's a great encouragement. I have faced things over the years and faced people falling away and see good godly men just quit and get wrapped up in some terrible things. And it's real easy for me to become discouraged because of all of that. But then I can look at some of the young men, I'm like, boy, look at that zeal. Look what the future holds with these young men and these young ladies, you know, and the decisions that they're making. You know, what a great example that is for me. For me. You know, young people, you know, I talked this morning about the men and the women and how, you know, you look up to us, but to be honest, we look down to y'all as well. You know, we get discouraged if you're not what you're supposed to be. You know, if you're not one of those with genuine faith and wanting to be obedient, you are backsliding, you have this others, but when you're faithful, when you're godly, when you're studying, when you're learning, when you're growing, you know, you are such a great example to us. You are a great benefit to us. You really help build us up. We need young people that are profitable for the ministry. Profitable for the ministry. This morning I talked about, you know, men, you know, meeting the requirements for eldership, for deacons. You know, young people, we got to have you being faithful to be able to take and fulfill the right system that the Lord has put in place for the church to work properly. You know, if we don't have good, strong, faithful young people for parents, you know, men to have faithful children growing up, there's no eldership. I truly feel that that's why across the country we have either no elderships or unscriptural elderships. And it's because men, women, they've not raised their children properly. The children are not the kind we're talking about right now. And elderships cannot be made. And we need to realize that if we don't have an eldership, we're really not the group the Lord expects us to be. And I know I hate to say that, but that is honest. That's the truth. You know, if we don't have an eldership, we're really not being what we're supposed to be. You know, he was told to go out and to set up elderships. You know, to go in and find those men that met those qualifications and establish it. That way the church worked properly. If we don't have an eldership, there's not one where I'm at. I can truthfully say out of the five so congregations that I've been a part of in my life, I have never been with one with an eldership, ever. Ever. I mean, that's so sad, but the reason, almost always, is a lack of faithful children. A lack of faithful children. You know, you can't just blame the child. And as soon as you start blaming them, I'm like, no. No, you had the ability to teach, to instruct before they got old enough to do whatever they feel like they're going to do. It falls on our shoulders as parents. I don't want us to take and look back and say, oh, you know, our parents, our grandparents, great-grandparents. No, you know what you got to do right now? You got to say, okay, what am I going to do? How am I raising my children? Or am I teaching my children to be a certain kind of individual? Am I going to be able to be an elder? Or maybe if you it's already past that point. How can I raise my children so that they can become an elder? It's one of those things that you got to work at. But the Lord's body will never be what it's supposed to be without an eldership. We've got to break that cycle. I truly feel like the last 50 years that there's become a cycle of not wanting elderships even. There was a woman there in Lakeview some years back. She just flat told the men that she would not be under an eldership. She just flat said, she said, y'all set up an eldership, I won't be here. She said, I won't be under one. You know, and I think that mindset has actually been a prominent mindset for some years, and that's why there's a lack of it. You know, people don't want to take and have someone over them in authority. You know, they like the whole idea of like men, you know, and them making the decision because women can tell their man what to do. And in a lot of ways, and that's how they get their way, they get their will. They don't want an eldership because if you have a true eldership and those men truly meet those qualifications, their wives are not going to sit there and say, when you go in there today, you better make sure this happens. Because their wives have met their qualifications as well. That's why a lot of times the elderships are not wanted. Young people, we got to have you profitable for the ministry. And that's more than just, you know, being faithful for your parents, you know, so that they can meet those qualifications. More than just the benefit unto your own self. It's for the benefit of those that are lost in this dying world. You know, you've got to be able to take the word out. You know, that may be an example. That may be truth. You know, that may be preaching and teaching. Whatever the case may be, you're that shining light. I know myself talking to a bunch of young people out in the world. They're looking at me like, that old guy with the gray in his beard, you know, what was he know? He don't know anything. But, you know, you take someone like Owen that's learning and growing. You know, you take like Lawton and some of these others. You know, they can actually take and go to people their own age and really make a difference. I was really impressed with Seth the other day. He was playing Minecraft. And his little friend that was on there with him, they're pretty good people. Deanna could probably tell me exactly what group they are again. Apostle something, I don't know. I get it mixed up. But he was playing with him, and his little buddy said something about they were going to church to do something. And Seth was like, that's not allowed. And he was like, what? He said, in the Bible, you know, the nurse center playing the whole time, you know. And he says, in the scriptures, that's not what the church is for. And he's like, yeah, but we have this building. He says, yeah, but you're not allowed to have that building. And I'm sitting here and I'm like, wow, my 10-year-old boy is doing a pretty good job of teaching a lesson here on institutionalism and socialization of the scriptures. You know, and I'm thinking, you go, boy. You know, and if I sat there and tried to tell that same boy that, he would just look at me like, but he's communicating back and forth. He's discussing this. Well, why, Seth? You know, and Seth's talking to him. There's no way I could do that. There's no way that I could take and have that kind of conversation. We've got to have those young people that are profitable for the ministry. Here, you know, Paul, you know, writing to Timothy, he says, only Luke is with me, and telling Timothy, because he wants Timothy to come to it, get Mark, bring him with you, for he is useful to me for ministry. Now, this is the same Mark that he said that he had no place for. You know, when they took and they went out on a missionary journey, he turned around and he left them. And when they wanted to go the second time, Paul and Barnabas, a great preaching team, split over this. Paul says, no. He's one of those backsliding ones we talked about earlier. He left. He wouldn't stand for the truth. He left. He walked off. I don't really have a place for him. But Mark didn't stop. Mark grew. Mark became favorable. Now, Paul's tough. You know, I've mentioned that already in my letter. Paul's a tough man. And here he says, you go get Mark. You go get Mark. This Mark, he's grown up to be a fine man. Now, he says, bring him with you, for he's useful to me. He's useful to me for the ministry. You know, we got to have young folk like that. I think it's great that, you know, I could take and go to Lakeview or even come here and take some of these young men and take them out and say, you know, let's go. Let's go talk and knock on some doors. Let's go talk to people. And have them by your side working and teaching. You know, that's such a great thing. We need more of them. some more young people need in the church, young people who can be a partner or fellow helper. And I know that's the point I just made. 2 Corinthians 8:23, Paul here again speaking. If anyone inquires about Titus, because, you know, Titus is a young man just like Timothy. So he's like, you know, I'm sending Timothy. If anybody, you know, has, you know, an inquiry, you know, a question about Titus, he is my partner and fellow worker concerning you. Boy, I'd love for Paul to say that about me. I don't know about you, but to get that from the Apostle Paul, for, you know, so, you know, him to write a letter to another church somewhere and says, oh, you know, Verlin? Yeah, when Verlin gets there, you need to understand he's my partner. He's my fellow worker. You know, you need to trust him. He's just like, you know, you trust in me and, you know, you respect me and you hold me. Yeah, when Verlin gets there, you know, he's my partner, my fellow worker. Boy, that would be great to hear. And here, you know, Titus, I think Titus would definitely be younger than me. You know, that's what he says about Titus, this young man. What a great thing to have said about you. It goes on and says, or if our brethren are inquired about, they are messengers of the churches, the glory of Christ. So when Paul sends these individuals out, he's really telling them, he says, these are great, great people. And even Titus or Timothy, these young men, he says, I have faith in them. I trust them. They are my partner, my fellow worker. You know, it's great when you get to work with some of these young people and they have that zeal, that fire I've already talked about. And you're thinking, boy, look at my partner I have here to work with me. Look at these young people that's got such zeal, such vigor, such knowledge, such strength, and they just can't wait to take and save somebody. That's a huge benefit to us because sometimes we lose that. You know, but here they have it. They're making up for what maybe we have lost, and together, you know, we're going to be better. That's how that partnership works. We need some young people that are full of faith and trust in God. You know, again, that faith is that belief with obedience. 1 Samuel 17, we're going to look at verses 32 through 37. 1 Samuel 17, 32 through 37, and this is my last point I'm making on these. Then David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. Now this is David coming up to fight Goliath. Fight Goliath. Now David's a little boy. He is. He's just a little boy. I don't know how old he really is, but he's a little boy. And here's Saul. Now remember Saul, the king? You know, Saul was really neck and head above the normal man. That would be like someone up here with me. I mean, this guy would be someone you look up and say, yeah, I'll follow that man. You know, he could go out and whoop somebody. I'll take and follow through with him. You know, and here he's talking about this little boy. And he says, you know, no, don't let nobody worry. All these men of war, you know, they're scared, they're afraid. This little fellow will take care of it. Go on. Really, could you see yourself sending out a little man instead of you, someone of that stature, going out to do it yourself? And Saul said to David, you are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are a youth, and he a man of war from his youth. Now, here's why David's going to be able to walk right on out there and all those men cowering. David said to Saul, your servant used to keep his father's sheep, and when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went out after it and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it arose against me, I caught it by its beard and struck and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing he has defiled the armies of the living God. Moreover, David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion, from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. Saul said to David, go. And the Lord be with you. Like I said, you know, how could you? I don't think I could send a boy out to do what should be a man's job. But the difference between Saul, the difference between all those men that were arrayed, those men of war, and David didn't think so much of himself. He knew that they were going against God. It wasn't that they was coming against us. And who are we? You know, we're this great and mighty people. David says, you know, they're arrayed against God. That giant over there, he's mocking my God. He says, I'm going to walk right over there, and it's not David himself going to. He says, God's going to take care of him. He says, just like God protected me, God helped me kill the lion and the bear, God's going to take down the giant. Now, all these other men, their problem is they didn't have faith. They didn't have trust in God. What they had was in themselves, and they knew they couldn't do it. David didn't have that, though. Sometimes the older we get, you know, sometimes we may even start thinking more of ourselves than we do of God. I think sometimes young people, they understand that a little better. I know David here assured us. As we close out, youth is a powerful tool. I mean, it's such a powerful thing for us as adults to waste that, to let them waste that. is a terrible thing. 1 Timothy 4, let's look at verses 11 through 16. 1 Timothy 4, 11 through 16. These things command and teach. Let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word and conduct and love and spirit and faith and impurity. Till I come, give attention to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine. Do not neglect the gift that is in you, which was given to you by prophecy with the laying on of hands of the eldership. Meditate on these things. Give yourself entirely to them, that your progress may be evident to all. Take heed to yourself and to the doctrine. Continue in them, for in doing this, you will save both yourself and those who hear you. Like I said, Timothy's a very young man, and Paul's telling him, if you do what you're supposed to do, if you're the young man that you're supposed to be, you'll save yourself and those who hear you. I know there's a lot of young people that have saved their parents. You know, parents starting to fall away, losing that zeal, falling away, and their young people, that's within their households, brings them back. Youth is such a powerful tool. But we need to understand that adults must teach them to have this frame of mind. You know, they've got such potential, and it can be used for good or it can be used for bad. And it's really up to us to instill that from them from a babe. I talked about that this morning. You know, as a babe in your arm, you can start that process. Just that understanding that there's right and wrong, and that they can't make up their own mind on things, and there's certain things they have to do. And as they get enough age to really learn, you've got to instill within them, you know, what's right and wrong, and that they have to make those choices, and that there's only the certain decisions to make, and these others are all folly. We have to make sure that they have that mindset, so when the time comes for them to step up and start making their own decision, it'll be much easier for them. Tonight, as we close, again, this isn't a lesson on first principles, but hopefully, you know, this morning as we finished up, we discussed, you know, becoming that child of God, taking and becoming obedient, hearing God's Word, believing God's Word, you know, wanting to be obedient to it, wanting to remove the sins in our life, repenting of those things, leaving those things behind, confessing that we believe Jesus is the Son of God and being baptized, washing that old person away to become that new person. You know, really that should start as we are in our youth, as we learn the truth and we're instructed. Now, I know sometimes that doesn't occur till we're older. You know, all of us have not been as fortunate as some of us to be raised within the church and to have that instruction. You know, some come out of the world, you know, and that's a great thing too. The angels rejoice no matter. Maybe you have obeyed the gospel, but you've turned back into the world. Tonight, take and correct those things. Come back to Him before it's too late. The lesson's yours. If we can help you in either case, come forward as we stand and sing.